Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening and welcome to the Barb Darby Advocate for the Mentally Ill. That's the homeless mentally ill. And we are so pleased to be with you today and bring to you a wonderful broadcast by Barb Darby. Barb Darby is a human rights advocate out of the Atlanta, Georgia area. He's concerned about human rights throughout the world. His primary advocacy is for the homeless, mentally ill. Now, Barb Darby received a BA in psychology from Emory University. He also studied psychology and theology in graduate school. He's a former employee of Georgia Regional Hospital, Boston State Hospital, and New Hampshire's Hanover Dartmouth Hospital. In 1994, he co-founded Atlanta Food, Not Bums. Barb Darby has been involved in the struggle for human rights for the least among us for over 20 years. He is very concerned about our mentally ill population who seem to be deliberately left behind regarding resources for housing, resources for treatment, and he will tell you about these problems today and invite you to participate in positive change. We do not simply want to expose dirty laundry. We want to unite with you and work out positive change. I want to let you know right now that if you go to your internet and if you put in the word contact elected officials, there's a site that will come up. And when that site opens, you go in there and you put in your address and zip code, and it will tell you who your elected officials are right down the line, who your governor is, who your state legislators are, who your president of the USA and vice president is, who your senators and congresspersons are, and it will give you an opportunity to just sit right there and send them an email. Yes, you don't have to go through changes. You live in the computer age. You can send your representatives an email just by going online and going where it says contact elected officials. So again, the shows that are aired on human rights demands are shows that air issues, not just to sit around and talk about and badmouth the situation the way it is. We are here to change makers. And right now, we're going to bring on Mr. Barb Darby, who can talk to you about one of the issues that we are very concerned about here at Human Rights Demand, and that is the homeless mentally ill. Before we go to Mr. Darby, I want to remind you of something. Frederick Douglass, who was a great abolitionist back in the 1800s, said that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. The homeless mentally ill are usually not voters. Even though they may have been people who were gifted, educated, they still, in their present condition, are not usually voters. Many of our veterans have become homeless mentally ill people. And when they lost their address, they lost their ability to vote. So we're asking you to contact elected officials and let them know that you are concerned for the homeless mentally ill. You know what? If you can't think of anything else to say, just let them know that you're thinking about the homeless mentally ill as a voter. So go ahead, Mr. Darby. I want to thank you. You know, you've been away for, I think, a week, and we really appreciate that you're getting in contact with us last week and letting us know that you were a neighbor. And that is not surprising to me, that you would be all to help a neighbor. And now we're glad that you're back to help us to understand the plight of the homeless mentally ill. I want you to know that you have a caller on the line already, and I believe this is Miss Lillian Eagle Feather. Is that you, Miss Lillian?
Yes, it is, Mary. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. Now, we really appreciate your call. And we ask you and the whole audience to please grab the link after this show and post it on your online services, your social networks, and send it to your newspapers, too. We have got to do our part to make sure that the plight of the homeless mentally ill is not something that can be swept under the rug. Because while we give legal assistance to others, and while we give human rights assistance to other countries, let us not forget our own people here who are homeless and mentally ill, who deserve treatment and subsistence. Let us put our words to action. And so I thank you, Ms. Eagle Feather, for coming on the air. And Bob Darby, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, thank you, Mary. I appreciate it. And the introduction that you gave to what I have to say was very complete. I do consider myself to be primarily an advocate for the homeless mentally ill because, as so someone who has worked in the field and someone who has a vital interest in the subject, I am amazed with what is going on and how there is so little public attention being paid to the fact that mental illness, which is really arguably the greatest public health concern that we have in this country, is getting almost no attention except for the occasional outburst of people who are not receiving treatment in criminal matters, the terrible shootings and so forth that have happened in the last few years. Most people don't. Maybe they're not old enough to remember. I'm 69. I remember a time when such massacres were very unusual. Well, the reason that these massacres or occasional massacres are taking place is the collapse of the mental health system. Mental hospitals have been closed down all over the United States since the so-called process of deinstitutionalization began in the late 70s, actually the early 80s in earnest. And hospitals all over the United States have been closed such that nationwide in this country, more than three times as many mentally ill people are housed in prisons and jails as in hospitals. And that's according to a 2010 study by the National Sheriff's Association and the Treatment Advocacy Center. So to be mentally ill now is becoming a crime. Instead of providing people with what the vital needs they have when they become mentally ill, people are being treated as criminal when they become mentally ill. And of course, with the great numbers of people who in this country and around the world who suffer from mental illness, occasionally people who are mentally ill will commit crimes, serious crimes. And the worse, the more worsened the treatment system becomes and the more hospitals close down, the more crimes we will see that will be committed by the mentally ill. But just to give you an overview of the numbers of the mentally ill, according to the National Institute of Mental Health, which is the government-sponsored watchdog organization for mental illness, in the adult population over 18, there are 5.7 million people with bipolar disorder, also called manic depression, and 2.4 million people with schizophrenia. That means that over 8 million people over 18 in this country have a severe mental illness. If you add into that the most common form of severe mental illness, which is depression, there are about 14 million severely depressed people in the United States. So the number of mentally ill people is great. It's a significant number of the overall population. So an estimated percent, according to the National Institute of Mental Health, of 26.2% of Americans ages 18 or older, about 1 in 4 adults, suffer from some diagnosable mental disorder in any given year. So what is happening, instead of the government and private organizations, federal, state, all sorts of organizations, paying more attention to this problem, they're paying less attention, and they're defunding programs that are already in existence, and they're putting great numbers of people in prison. And in fact, according to the prison statistics that are available to us, about 40% of everyone in prison suffers from a diagnosable mental illness, some quite severe. So what we're seeing in this country is a collapse of the public mental health system, the privatization of the system, so that the only people who have money, who have insurance, who have extraordinary means are able to get the expensive private psychiatric attention that is available. So I would like to hear from the guest what her experience has been and what you would like to see done. Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Would you tell us about yourself? And
I'm 57 years old, Native American, and was abandoned by my mother at the age of 4. So I was raised in non-Native homes. I was abused in every which way you can think. So as a teenager, I started being rebellious, and I beat a girl up really bad and was institutionalized, put in a mental hospital, put on medication. But everybody in that group home I was in was on medication. That was their way to control it, was by putting us on medication. Well, my issue today is I have PTSD, severe depression, and where I'm scared to go outside. What is that called? My issue, and I have a son who's severe disabled, mentally disabled, because he's been in and out of prison. He receives medication while in prison, but he doesn't get help when he gets out. And my issue is that when they come out of foster care, they're not given any type of help. They're not given any, this is how you do it. This is what you do. You stay on your meds, or I've been on my own since I was 15 years old without medication most of my life. So I turned to do drugs and alcohol, but I am now sober and clean for 3 years. So, and I went to, homeless for a number of years, 3.5 years, left out on the streets. And finally, I prayed and cried and try to figure out how I could get myself out of this situation. And I went to the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless and to the mental department up there and started seeing a psychiatrist. And I got housed. They have a housing program through the coalition. And I got housed, and I've been housed through the coalition for about 7 years now. And I'm on my meds. I don't go to the ER. I used to get beat up and stuff, but I haven't had any ER visits. I'm clean and sober. I have a clean and sober home. But and I am so thankful and so grateful for the coalition for the homeless. But I see a lot of homeless people out here that don't want the help. They don't want to be controlled. They call it controlled, but to me it's help. And now I'm dealing with my son, trying to get him help to get on meds so he can live a normal, a good, productive life. He can't even work. He groomed. I sent him to his father. He was groomed and sexually molested by a stepmother who got in a relationship with him, waited till he turned 18 and took off with him. And I sent him to them at the age of 11. Now, this woman is still working, and she works for the Girls Club. I finally confronted her and told her. She said, well, why are you waiting? I said, well, if I finally got the courage up to tell you how I feel, you know, you ruined his life. You took away his childhood. He never got to grow up to date teenage girls his own age. So he's very, very sick, the way he looks at, you know, at life, at people, at women. And I just sent him to South Dakota yesterday to the reservation because we have dry reservations. They don't have alcohol stores. You know, alcohol is illegal. And so I sent him there yesterday to hopefully to dry him out and to try and get some help through that Indian Health Services up there. So, and that's my story. And you know, if they can help the foster kids, I've heard of it just recently of children being kicked out at the age of 18. As soon as they turn 18, they're outed, you know, of the home without any kind of help, without any kind of care, you know. And it's painful because you have nobody. You had nobody in the first place. And when you're out there on your own, you still don't have anybody. So I went through a lot of rough things in my life. But I just can say this, that I am not a victim. I'm a survivor. And I am proud to be where I'm at today. Very proud.
Well, you are a survivor, and you have had extraordinary good fortune in finding the coalition there in Colorado to help you. And it seems to me that you should be an inspiration to many people who are listening to this program. What advice would you have to people who are seeking such help in other states that don't have a coalition? What should they do when they... You think they should contact their government agencies, their legislators and their congresspeople and their council people? What do you recommend people do?
Yes, I recommend that. I recommend that they do contact the elected officials and also to pass this H.R. 3717 and the AOT programs to help the mentally incarcerated also. If possible, try to move to another state where they do have help. You know, if they can't make it where they are, I would get up and leave. That's what I did. I've moved so much in my life, it's not even funny. This is the longest I've lived somewhere in my whole life. It's in this home right here, thanks to the coalition. And I wish that they had this program in every state. Every state, because there are so many homeless families out there. I pray for them every day.
Well, in Georgia...
How can I interrupt and let the audience know that we want to hear from you, too? You don't have to have a mentally ill close family member. You are a person in this society where we all live. And whether you recognize it or not, we all live together. And we all should have some input, something to say, something to add to this conversation regarding the homeless mentally ill. The telephone number here is 347-857-3293. Again, 347-857-3293. Mr. Darby welcomes your calls. He welcomes your questions and comments. And, Bob, I want to ask you something right now. Regarding people with serious mental illness, and I believe that Ms. Eagle Feather's son suffers from bipolar disorder and alcoholism. She said that she herself was suffering from PTSD at one point. So among serious mental illnesses, and people with that condition, what percentage of them end up homeless? Do you know, or has any study been done?
One study, excuse me, I think I can address that. One study, a large multi-study done by the University of California, indicated that 18% of all people who are diagnosed with a serious mental illness become homeless at one point of their in their lives. So if you're talking about the statistics that I revealed, 8.1 million, if you add to that the depression, well, we're talking about millions of people throughout the United States in the course of a year experience homelessness because of mental illness. The exact numbers, are not, of course, can't really be calculated, but the numbers are great. If 18% of all mentally ill people experience homelessness, and if there are approximately 38 million people in out of our population of 307 million people who have some form of mental illness, then you're talking about millions of individuals, very many, you know, 4 or 5 million, depending on how you do your arithmetic, depending on how you believe the statistics. So if a person has a mental illness, and mental illness is extremely common, there's a very real threat of their ending up homeless or incarcerated or both. So it's a great situation.
I want you to know that one of our advocate ministers, Reverend Dr. Floyd Harris, went out cop watching with his video camera one day when he was off from work. And he took pictures of police officers in Fresno, California, giving tickets to homeless people for being homeless. They literally have a system in Fresno, California, where they issue tickets to people for having no place to go. And so, if the person has more to carry than he can physically carry himself, for instance, if they try to use shopping carts, then they have a garbage truck that they call to come and take their possessions. And so a lot of people complain because the homeless may smell bad or what have you, but how do you like that? A garbage truck is called to take their possessions if they have something they cannot physically carry. And so, say a person had a change of clothes, some towels, some soap, a blanket to lie down on, and what have you. If that was heavy for the person, because understand that homeless people can also be elderly, if they can't carry all of that, they actually call the homeless garbage truck to come and take the homeless little meager possessions. And in Fresno, California, I put a picture on your billboard here at Human Rights Demand that Reverend Floyd Harris took, and it is a picture of the homeless, their shopping baskets lined up outside of the graveyard. Of all the places in Fresno to be, they have found the most peace lined up at the graveyard. And that is indicative that they understand that is where the officials of Fresno, California want them, in the graveyard. So their basket, I ask you to look at it, audience, right here at Human Rights Demand. Look at the Bob Darby Advocate for the Homeless Mentally Ill, and you will see the pictures that were taken in Fresno, California by Reverend Floyd Harris, who does cop watching on his days off with his video camera, and he happened to have seen where the homeless in Fresno feel most comfortable in the graveyard, lined up outside of the graveyard. This is a pathetic situation. And these are living people. These people found peace among the dead. Finally, they found peace among the dead, and they feel like that's one place where they will not be chased away, where they will not be written tickets for existing. I think that is absolutely the most telling thing, that one picture. You know, they say a good picture
can relay 1,000 words, and that picture just tells it all. We need to do better. We need to do better for our mentally ill veterans. We need to do better for our mentally ill brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, who have broken under the weight of living in the 21st century with all the stresses that we all have to contend with. But some people are more equipped to deal with the stresses, and some other people have not been through as many stress factors. We need to be our brother's keeper. Don't you think so, Bob Darby?
Well, I certainly do think that we need to be our brother's keeper, and we need to, as a society overall, we need to examine our priorities and what we're spending our money on and our time on. We need to look at the fact that we as a nation are spending almost as much as the rest of the world combined on weapons. We're spending almost $1 trillion a year on our defense budget, and with only 5% of the world's population, we're spending almost as much as the rest of the world combined on our defense budget. That says something about us, and it also says something about us as a society, that we have the highest per capita prison incarceration rate in the world. We have more than 4 times as many people in prison than per capita than even China has, which is an authoritarian state in a lot of ways a lot more brutal than our own. So we are now a society with collectively that by its behavior demonstrates very bad values. In Atlanta, for example, the Atlanta Braves, a baseball team, is building a new stadium in a different county outside the central part of Atlanta, Cobb County, that will cost the taxpayer $1 billion. $1 billion that is being put on the taxpayers of Georgia and the city of Atlanta and Fulton County and Cobb County to build a new stadium, which is totally unnecessary because we already have a 30-year-old stadium that was built for the Olympics and other reasons. So if we took that $1 billion that they're spending on a new baseball stadium and put that $1 billion towards properly housing and rehabilitating, helping the mentally ill and people with other problems such as drug dependency and alcoholism get on their feet, if we could guarantee housing for everyone in the state of Georgia for $1 billion. So we have the resources. All over the country we have the resources that are being spent frivolously and foolishly on things like unnecessary weaponry and football stadiums and baseball stadiums instead of helping millions of people in this country who are unfairly incarcerated, who are thrown out on the streets literally to freeze to death, starve to death, to get opportunistic diseases, to be preyed upon by other people. And we need to take a good, strong look at what we are doing as a society. We need to be able to criticize ourselves. And when we see money being spent on $1 billion football and baseball stadiums in our state or in our city, we need to complain about it loudly. We need to get in touch with our city councilman. We need to contact the governor's office and the mayor's office and our national congressmen and our national senators, congress people. We need to complain about this. Let them know that we think this is wrong. Americans have misplaced values collectively. As individuals, we can be very decent, but collectively we are not keeping up with what we should be doing. And it's a matter of reassessing our values and reapplying our resources. Does anyone have any reply to that or any suggestions of what we might do?
Go ahead, please, Gloria.
What do you think, Miss Eaglefeather?
Well, like I said, like the youth that are coming out of foster homes,
yes.
I'm sure that they suffer from some type of mental illness through the whatever they're subjected to. also. So if they can help the youth also and empower them and show them the resources and the way, which way to go instead of ending up on the streets, because that's what happened to me. And I know I seen Dr. Phil went on, he went to the Congress on May 29th, and he addressed the Congress about helping foster care program. And I bet a lot of the homeless people were in some type of situation as I was. I'm so grateful for where I'm at and that I'm not on the streets and that I'm getting the help that I need. And I just suggest that people who are ill to reach out for help, and those who have family members that are ill to try to get them help. And that's about all. That's it, I guess.
Well, I think that you've given some excellent advice. If you can't find help in your native state wherever you're living, and if you have to move to another state where there is help available, you are able to get help in Colorado. But when people ask me where to go for help in Atlanta, there isn't much. I'm at a loss to tell them what to do because the problem here is so great. Greater Atlanta has about 5 million people, and we have as many as 20,000 people living on the streets, depending on whose estimate you believe. And of those, about a third are mentally ill. So the hospitals and the prisons, the hospitals are shut down, the prisons and the jails have been opened, and people with severe problems have ended up on the streets, are incarcerated. And very often, talk about the foster children program. According to the New York Times editorial recently, I'm quoting this, childhood trauma is a common denominator among prison inmates and is also the source from which many psychiatric diagnoses spring. 92% of female inmates report sexual, physical, or severe emotional abuse in childhood, and boys who experience or witness violence are 1,000 times more likely to commit violence than those who do not. And of juvenile girls identified as delinquent, 75% have a sexual abuse history. So that has a lot to say for how badly run our foster care program is. You know, and childhood abuse is one of the main causes for mental illness and alcohol and drug addiction, and eventually incarceration. Do you think is that true from your experience and observation, Ms. Eaglefeather?
That's very true.
And what can we do about it? I mean, I think that we need to speak out. We need to talk with people as individuals every chance we get. We need to talk with our elected officials. I don't know of any one thing that we should do. We should just be very public.
I think that the social services, welfare reform, the foster care program, the welfare reform, they need to start checking on these homes better than what they have in the past. Because here in Colorado, there's been a lot of deaths in the foster care program. So they're under investigation. The Indian Child Welfare Program in South Dakota, they have a high percentage of children, and so many percentage of the children, 98% of Native children, are placed with non-Native homes. We need to try and let, like some of us grandparents, try and be a foster parent to one of our grandchildren. Sure, maybe we did something wrong in the past, but as we get older, we learn from our mistakes. We get on our medication. We get stabilized. And we're not the same people we were 20, 30 years ago. Give us a chance. Because now, you know, my daughter's children are in foster care with my brother. My son took them in. It's it was like a cycle. They say it repeats itself, and it has. But my, it's lucky that, you know, we're lucky that my son stepped in and took my daughter's children. But, and my son is to his children. But I think that the foster care program itself needs to be addressed and needs to be, these homes need to be checked. These children need to be checked in on more often. Maybe better social worker training, so they can see the signs of the children. Maybe something's going on in the home that the children are too scared to talk about. That was our situation. We had no social worker that would come by and visit us to see how we were doing at all. So that's
well,
why.
If you were...
Excuse me. Go ahead.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just going. I will just say very briefly, if you examine the government budgets, the county budget, the city budget, the state budgets, and see what they're spending on other programs, you might come to the conclusion that I have, that their priorities are wrong. In Atlanta, mm-hmm. for example, the city of Atlanta in Fulton County, which is the dominant population, as the dominant population of Atlanta's spending $4.5 million a year on the so-called Bureau of Cultural Affairs, which is kind of a slush fund that goes to a lot of private individuals. We're spending $4.5 million a year on the Bureau of Cultural Affairs, and yet we just shut down two major shelters because they said they couldn't afford to do them, which means depriving several hundred more people of a place to sleep at night. So a lot of the money that is needed for setting up better foster care programs and hiring social workers to look after such programs, the money is available. It's just being spent on the wrong things. So if you examine your budgets and complain about misspent money, that might be of some help too. That is being done to some extent in Atlanta, but we have a very very bad situation here, too. Georgia is, the Deep South is notorious for its mean-spirited nature in a lot of ways. And the way it treats its foster children, the way it treats its incarcerated individuals, the way it treats its homeless is notorious. But it sounds like it's better in Colorado because you were able to get the help you needed. You were able to get back on your feet. But when people ask me what they can do in Georgia, it's a difficult question for me to answer because we do not have a coalition for the homeless, mentally ill that does anything. There is such an organization that exists by name. But basically, I don't see them really accomplishing much at all. But
may I say something?
Yes, ma'am, please.
About 6 years ago, Nancy Pelosi came to the Coalition for the Homeless, and she had a tour of the coalition, and after she left, she donated so much, a lot of money to the coalition so they can remodel and extend their program and build. They're building for the homeless that they have. They put them in if they finish a program. So they do have incentive. If you do a program, then you get a home. So that's what they're doing here. But Nancy Pelosi came to visit, and after she left, the coalition it grew bigger.
Well, I wish Georgia would have such an experience. The situation here is nearly desperate because in the last year they've shut down two major mental hospitals and they're shutting down funding for existing shelters in Atlanta, and this situation keeps getting worse and worse with no end in sight. And meanwhile, they're spending outrageous amounts of money on things like baseball stadiums that aren't even needed. So you should be proud to live in Colorado. They're actually doing something. And Nancy Pelosi should come to Atlanta and meet. I wish you would. It's pretty pathetic here in the city of Atlanta, which is run by a Republican Governor Nathan Deal, who recently tied applying for unemployment benefits and Medicaid to taking obligatory drug tests. People cannot even apply to get emergency help unless they pay for themselves a drug test. So they're criminalizing poverty in a big way in this city. And by the way, what Mary was talking about, people getting tickets for being homeless, they've had on the books for a long time in just about every municipality and state laws against so-called vagrancy. If you do not have any money in your pocket or if you do not have identification, they can put you in jail for that, and they do put you people in jail for that. So if at any time an individual police officer just about anywhere wants to persecute or harass someone who is homeless, all they have to do is enforce vagrancy laws demanding identification or money. So we live in a pretty harsh society. Among industrialized societies, it's probably the harshest in the world. But I don't believe in giving up. I believe that we should do what we can. And I'm very proud to hear that in Colorado you are indeed fighting and with some success. Here in Georgia, right now we're kind of, those of us who are in the movement are kind of depressed. We don't know exactly what we should do that we're not doing already. We contact our Congress people. We contact our city council people. And nobody seems to do much. So it's every time it seems like I step out in my own neighborhood, I run into somebody who is conspicuously mentally ill and homeless. Every time I go downtown for any purpose, they're just large numbers of people who are living on the streets. So in Atlanta, it's a bad situation, and I'm very happy that you were able to successfully address your personal situation, Ms. Eagle Feather, and I appreciate your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I hope your son gets the attention and the help he needs, too.
I do too.
Well, I certainly appreciate both of you. We have learned so much good information, and you have certainly given us so much to think about. Mr. Bob Darby, Ms. Lillian Eagle Feather, we thank you. We thank you very much because you have given us so much to do. And I suggest that everyone please go online, look up HR 3717. That's House Resolution 3717. It is pending now before the U.S. Congress. So we are not at ground zero. We already have a bill pending before Congress that addresses some of the issues that are needed by our mental illness. We already have a bill to support. So we just ask that you please do your part. You, especially who are voters, we ask you to contact your elected officials, and you can put those four words in your Google browser, contact your elected officials. And it will take you to a page to put in your address and zip code. It will connect you to your state legislator, your representatives in Congress and Senate. Let them know that you are concerned about the homeless mentally ill. Let them know you are concerned about people being denied treatment until they prove, usually through violence, that they are a danger to self and others. Let them know that you believe that it is the responsibility of all member states in the UN to provide for their handicapped citizens. These are citizens of America. They're not refugees, which is what people were called during Katrina. They're not refugees. Mentally ill people who are living outdoors the best they can and being chased by police are not refugees. They are your citizens. And it doesn't take but one slip and fall for you to be in that same shape. You hit your head in an accident today, and you could lose your sense of reason. So please, let's make the world better for everybody. Thank you, Mr. Darby. Thank you so much, Ms. Eagle Feather. And we ask that you share this link, and we all work together.